Bogger's on a mission, and the stakes are getting higher. Other teams in the majors don't have a prayer against the Friars.
Long ball, small ball, back against the wall. Offense, defense, swinging from the back fence, running down the bases, gonna touch them all.
Watch a swing in the ball.
What's going on, folks? Happy holidays from the East Village Times staff. This is episode number 131 of the East Village Times podcast with special guest Dan Zimborski. Dominic, how are you doing today? You got all your Christmas shopping done? You ready for the holiday season or what?
No, I haven't done it. There's a deal I like at a certain store that I'm not going to give away because I want to make sure that people don't steal my gift idea. Because I know that people listening to this podcast would be interested in that idea if that gives away any hints. Okay. And I need to get down there tomorrow morning, that done. But another thing, James, Ian said greetings and welcome to the East Village Times podcast to start us out today. So that was a little different, but I like it.
I figured I might as well change things up. I've been doing that greetings East Village Times podcast for 130 shows probably, and maybe 128 of them have been that way. So we're going to try to change things up, do things a little differently. I don't know, just it's a new year. The new year's coming. We're just going to do some different things here at East Village Times with the podcast and with the site. So look forward to that. It's awesome to talk to Dan. Dan's been a guest on the show quite often. He's a good friend of ours, awesome mentor to the young journalists in our group. We're excited to have him on. So we will be back shortly with Mr. Dan Zimborski. Thank you, folks, for joining us on episode 131 of the EVT podcast. We're delighted to be joined so close to the holidays by Santa Claus, if you will. Mr. Dan Zimborski is here to give us some Zips predictions. What's up, Dan? How are you doing?
I'm doing well, guys. Is that a reference to my body shape? Because it is kind of Kris Kringle-esque.
No, it's a reference to the gift that you give every year around this time to.
Okay, because people, you know, I think about the description of the what was the Christmas thing with Santa Nick, you know, or Saint Nick.
Yeah.
It's not the 12 days of Christmas, the night before Christmas? Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
You know, with his red cheeks and his bowl his bowl that his stomach that shook like a bowl of jelly. That's it's kind of accurate. I mean, I don't really wear a lot of red because it makes me look like a big strawberry, but yeah.
There you go. It's a new image for you, right? For the 2021 season two. Dan, you know, give some of the listeners a little idea of what the Zips projection is. You know, you and I have talked a few years about this. You've been gracious enough to come on the podcast and discuss the Zips projection. But give us a synopsis of what Zips is for those people out there that might not be familiar with it.
Well, the executive summary, because, you know, I could probably talk about this for an hour without taking a breath. But Zips is a computer projection system. It essentially takes a player's past, attempts to establish a baseline based on their stats, based on certain advanced stats like that we can get from StatCast, things like that, basic characteristics of players. It tries to see where a player is going by comparing players to large cohorts of similar players in history so that, you know, plotting 35-year-old first basemen are compared to other one-dimensional first basemen and, you know, young fast center fielders are compared to other fast center fielders. Fernando Tatis Jr. is compared to a large cohort of players that's very different than from, say, Eric Hosmer's cohort. And then, you know, you get a very wide bar, a very wide, you know, cone of ignorance for the future, and you try to plot the best kind of mid course, so to speak. I mean, it works a lot like hurricane forecasts. You ever see the graphic where you see the little hurricane in the graphic and then this big massive cone that comes out, and you know, 7 days later it could be like anywhere from one place to 700 miles apart from it or something. That's kind of what projecting a player is, because I mean, the future is very uncertain. Error bars are massive. But, you know, we're just trying to peer through that fog just a little bit, because on some level, everybody who makes a decision in baseball is making a projection, whether they explicitly do that with a projection system or not. When you take Joe Schmo over Jack Schmo, you're making, you know, an implicit evaluation that Joe Schmo's projection is going to be better. So this is just trying to go about it in a fairly objective way as well as I have the ability to do.
Yeah. And thank you for coming on, Dan. My question is, I've been very fascinated with this topic, is how heavily is the 2020 season being impacted into these projections? Because there was the weird double off season after spring training got shut down. And of course, a shortened 60 game season. So how heavily is that 60 game season being evaluated for players who either had a bad season or had a really good season?
It's definitely the most recent season that will have the least impact on future projections of any season in history. I mean, there's a lot of guesswork involved because we haven't had a season quite like this one. We've had shortened seasons, but never this short, never for this precise reason. So it's hard to really, you know, get like a good idea of what the best path is for predicting it. We'll be able to kind of tell that in hindsight, but it doesn't really help me now, unfortunately. The approach I found that worked best for the strike years was to consider that they played the rest of the season and do an in-season projection for the missing games and then consider that a normal year. Now, obviously, that in-season projection will have a lot more of previous years in it than whatever the current year is. So when it comes down to it, 2020's impact on a 2021 projection is about the same as 2018's now. Simply because 60 games versus 162. And that, of course, creates a problem for some players more than others, because for minor league players, they largely, if they weren't on the 60-man player pool and got into the majors, they didn't really have a season. I think our projections for rookies are going to be worse than normal. And I don't think there's any way around that. I wish there was. But it's a challenge that, you know, teams have to face. They get to look at the players, but it's not really the same as having, you know, a whole season of seeing a guy against, say, double-A pitchers or something. So baseball is, you know, pawing through the dark also here.
And a concern I have for the 2021 Padres is that some of the players who took massive steps forward in that short season are going to regress a bit, come back to the mean. Is there a player that sticks out to you on this Padres 2021 team that could take a bit of a regression and come back to what they had been in previous years?
I think one of my concerns would be Eric Hosmer, and if he can continue to hit fly balls, because you saw him in the first month or so of the season, he was hitting a lot of fly balls, fewer grounders than the usual from him. But if you actually tracked it over kind of a weighted average over like 20 games, that continually dropped as the season went on. And he had a lot more success with a fly ball heavy approach than in his usual one. So I'm kind of wondering how that sticks going into 2021, because it's easier to change than to keep up that change. How many diets have there been for New Year's resolutions that are on January 1st that aren't still diets on December 1st? I think that's probably the biggest question for the Padres, simply because as a whole, the projections are quite optimistic about the team. Not to give any spoilers, or I guess I'm giving a spoiler, is that Zips pretty much thinks that the Padres are the second best team in the National League. And the only position that projects below two wins in the lineup is first base. So if Eric Hosmer can hit like he did in 2020, all of a sudden there's no hole in the lineup. So it's probably one of the more interesting questions going forward.
Yeah, there's no doubt that he was a worm killer there for a while. And it's frustrating that a first base just wasn't lofting the ball and driving the ball. And it's still frustrating as a Padre fan seeing all the money invested into him at a position that's usually traditionally a offensive juggernaut, and we're just not getting that outcome from him. So it's definitely something of concern for Padre fans, that's for sure.
And at least the projection for him is closer to average than it was in previous years. I think
1.4, is that what it is?
Yeah, over our projected depth chart, it was 1.4 WAR, which isn't really that far from average. I think Zips projected, because, you know, Zips is kind of agnostic on playing time. Zips projected 581 plate appearances, and I have him at 1.2. But I think the year before it was like -0.1.
Yes.
So, yes, you know, to bump up your projection by a win and a half in a 60-game season, that's pretty good. And it shows progress, because it's much better for your first baseman to not have a hit profile like Willie Mays Hayes, because he does not hit like Mays, and he does not run like Hayes.
Just drive the ball. Just drive the ball. Let's move on to the player that everyone wants to see, that everyone seems to want to talk about. That's Fernando Tatis Jr. Projected at a 6.6, was slapped with an A-Rod comp from Zips, which is kind of cool. Give us your thoughts on Mr. Tatis and what you've seen from afar from him.
Oh, he's simply the most valuable player in baseball when you start figuring in contracts. And actually, in rest of career war, he has passed Mike Trout in Zips. Wow. And it's not like Mike Trout is being lapped by a lot of people. He's, I mean, yeah, he's 27, but three players have passed Trout now in rest of career Zips. Tatis, Ronald Acuna Jr., and Juan Soto. And to be in that list is incredibly impressive. Yes. It was a short season. He had a terrific case to be made for the MVP. I tend to think I probably still would have voted for him as MVP, even if he didn't quite keep up that same pace the entire season. Mm-hmm. But one thing that I liked is in 2019, you could rightly say, hey, he had a .410 batting average on balls in play. And if that regresses, I mean, his numbers will come down somewhat, not enough to, you know, make him anything but an awesome player, but you could see a step back. In 2020, his batting average on balls in play, as you would expect, dropped 100 points, but he's improved on such a wide basis that it almost had no effect on his bottom line on base percentage and slugging percentage. And now it's on firmer ground. Actually, Zips actually thinks that his batting average on balls in play underperformed where it should have been based on his hit data. Zips thinks that he should have been a 340 BABIP guy. Okay. And if he could keep what he added this year and have a 340 BABIP, all of a sudden, that is a scary player. Not that, yes. I mean, he's already scary, but that's Trout level, I think.
Yeah, yeah. And especially playing a vital defensive position like shortstop, which is just, you know, impressive as it is. And only 21. I mean, there's just, Padre fans are certainly just ecstatic with the future for Fernando Tatis Jr., that's for sure.
Yeah, the A-Rod comp, he got the young A-Rod comp. That's the comp you want. Occasionally, some players get aging third baseman get the A-Rod comp. And you're like, okay, this guy, he's good. And Alex Rodriguez was not a great player at this point, but he got, he got Mariners A-Rod as the comp. Early comp.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen. It's like when Juan Soto got a Ted Williams comp. It's like, one gets this.
Yeah. Well, let's stick on that theme because Bob Gibson comp was given for Denilson Lamet, and you referred to that as an early Bob Gibson comp, which, I mean, isn't a bad thing, but you see the potential. He just needs to polish it up a bit, right?
Yeah, Lamet, he's a player I've been talking up quite a bit. He was on my breakout pick list this year. One of the things about Lamet is he came relatively late to actually pitching. He was, he's not someone who's been pitching for 15 years. And he was always kind of raw, and his performance, even as kind of a raw pitcher, was pretty terrific, before injury issues. And he was pretty terrific this year. And the Bob Gibson comp is pretty rare because one of the things that always happens is people forget there was more than one Bob Gibson. And so there's always some random middle reliever who's kind of average-ish who gets compared to the Bob Gibson who pitched for the Brewers in the 80s. Of course, someone always forgets it and says, why is this guy compared to Bob Gibson? So I actually changed that player's name in my database so that he actually comes up now as not that Bob Gibson, along with other Frank Thomas and I don't know which Alex Gonzalez this is.
Nice. Yeah, the Alex Gonzalez thing is confusing. That always confused me. I mean, they played at the same time.
I got someone so mad at me. I was doing kind of a who's on first thing with them. I said, I don't know who the good Alex Gonzalez is. And he's telling me, no, this is the good Alex Gonzalez. Like, I still don't see who the good Alex Gonzalez is. And he's trying to convince me that one Alex Gonzalez is the good one. And I'm pretending I have no idea what he's talking about. It was kind of mean. Yeah. No wonder people get mad at me.
No shit.
Well, people get mad at you because they think that they know everything, and then you bring out these metrics and they don't quite understand them, so then they just go off their team biasy, but that's a whole nother discussion. So
yeah, I'm glad you guys aren't Rocky fans. The Rockies are there's always some they're not as upset right now. But Rockies fans for a period when they still had faith in their team were very angry with me all the time.
Then they've realized that their front office isn't very good. So shout out to the Rockies. Social media team's great, though. We'll give them that. A hot topic within the Padres community is the starting rotation. And part of that is the young prospects that the Padres have. And Mackenzie Gore projected at a 1.9 WAR, according to Zips, slightly below Murray Hone and significantly above Patino, both guys who have made their appearances in the major league so far, but Mackenzie Gore hasn't. What did you make of how Gore didn't come up to the majors this year, got jumped by guys like Patino and Weathers, and did that impact their projections at all for 2021?
It didn't really have a huge impact on their projections simply because none of them really had all that much playing time. I would have liked to see Gore, but the Padres were kind of in a different competitive position this year than in past seasons, where it's a little harder to work someone like that in the lineup. I think if the Dodgers hadn't been in the division and the Padres were running away with it, or if the Padres had had a poor season, I think it's more likely we would have gotten to see more of Gore or any of Gore. But that was a challenge this year because they were in a serious pennant race, you know, serious. And it's hard to audition guys during that. And that's one of the, you know, the downsides of not having a minor league season where you could normally see these guys in AAA. So it hurts teams with young pitching, whether they're stars or even players they just need to look at. The Orioles are kind of in similar straits, is they have a lot of high minors guys who are sort of good prospects that they really needed to look at, but they didn't have enough, you know, room to pitch everyone, even in a season that wasn't going to end in a divisional victory. I'm still very optimistic about Gore. And I think the Padres are taking a very measured approach, and I don't expect it to be as conservative in a normal year with a normal-ish minor league season. Maybe I should say normal-ish year. We don't really know that yet, but I'm still crossing my fingers that it's not like last year.
I don't think anything's going to be like last year. Could see a triple over a little bit.
Yeah, I'm just waiting for my shot. I want to go down to Walgreens and say, put all the science you have in my arm.
And then sticking on the starting pitching rotation for the San Diego Padres, there's been a lot of rumors around the Padres, Bauer, Snell, Gray, and even Darvish recently. Which of those four or some other starting pitcher do you think gives them a higher projection, according to Zips, if they were to add those guys to the starting rotation?
It would be close between Bauer and Darvish and slightly followed by Gray. I think that Gray is probably the most interesting for the Padres because even though they're going to spend more aggressively than they did in the past, I think that where they are, they look at some of their young talent and think, you know, they might want to focus more on locking some of them up long term rather than investing the amount in either picking up Bauer or picking up Darvish's contract. Or, you know, there's always the possibility that you give the Cubs better prospects and the Cubs eat some of that money. But I think that Gray might be the best fit just for what the Padres are trying to do. Mm-hmm. Everyone would help. I think if you add a name like that and all of a sudden I think the Dodgers would still project slightly better, but it's getting really close at that point.
Yeah, no, I think the only thing that scares me about Gray is Larry Rothschild and the interaction they had in New York, which is, I don't know, Padre fans are already kind of going that route and thinking that way. But they need pitching, and they need someone up there. And obviously they're going to make an acquisition somewhere. Do you think that we've seen the best of Trevor Bauer? Do you think that he can continue to evolve like he has been in the past few years?
I think we've seen the best just simply because pictures are like that. Once you have a guy with a Cy Young season, you never really project him to do any better than that. I think he's not that far from how he pitched this year. People will point at like some of his ERAs in the mid fours, but he always had a FIP, you know, around four or under four. He was in the American League, and he strikes out a lot more guys than he did in his early Indians days. When he came over from Arizona, I mean, he was striking out, what, 8 batters a game off the top of my head. And now last year he was like at 12. Yeah. I mean, that's a pretty big bump. And I know that strikeout rates have continued to increase in baseball, but that's significant. Mm-hmm. I know there's, you know, all sorts of conspiracy theories that he was mad about spin rate and pitchers cheating. So he was doing it too, to prove them wrong. And I mean, that's always going to be talked about, but I come from a family that has a lot of lawyers, and I was always raised to believe I only know what I can prove. And that kind of annoys people sometimes, but that's just the approach I take to things.
Well, that's kind of just simple logic, and people kind of ignore that nowadays. They kind of just think they know things and they kind of just say it. And it's just a society we live in, right? Let's talk about closers. Rosenthal and Yates are rumored to be of interest to the Padres. What kind of Zips projection would the relievers get with either pitcher?
The Yates projection is significantly better than the Rosenthal projection.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, when it comes down to it, I mean, Rosenthal was solid in 2020, but he doesn't have the best health history. He did, you know, have a period where he went Mark Wahlers the year before. And even though he pitched much better in 2020, I think that the Padres are kind of in a more risk averse position at this point, where you might not want to try to discover that for yourself.
Yeah.
And I'd be more comfortable having him. And, you know, I'm not saying, you know, don't be interested or anything, but I do think that you don't necessarily want to bring him. You don't really want to use him in the highest leverage role as your plan A. I think you can kind of see something similar with the Cubs and Craig Kimbrel, which Kimbrel can be a terrific closer, but do you really want to put your team's contending status on that? And that's kind of the question that they had to ask.
I think that's interesting because, I mean, Yates did have that injury last year that sidelined him for basically the entire season. And as soon as he went down, the Padres bullpen, you know, obviously these two things aren't correlated, but Padres bullpen got better after he went down. So, Yates does have a better track record recently than Rosenthal does. But either way, the Padres do need to add someone there.
One thing that makes me feel better about Yates is he's not really – his stuff – I mean, he's not reliant on being able to throw, you know, 97. He doesn't – that's not really his thing. Mm-hmm. So I tend to be a little more, I guess – merciful is the word.
Okay. He's more likely to rebound from an injury is what you're trying to say.
Yeah, that's kind of my gut reaction with him. And also, you know, I tend to kind of mark down 2020 injuries a little because of such a weird year. Having two spring trainings months apart kind of messed up everybody's conditioning to an extent. Mm-hmm. But who knows? It could be someone that we're not even talking about that ends up there.
Yeah, and last year, part of the reason the lineup got significantly better for the Padres was the young acquisitions of both Trent Grisham and Jake Cronenworth. Both are projected, according to Zips, to have an above a 3 WAR. And another hot topic within the Padres community was who should be the leadoff hitter for the San Diego Padres. And once Tatis moved out of that leadoff spot and into that two spot right in front of Manny Machado, the offense got better. And to me, two of the better leadoff candidates are Grisham and Cronenworth. Do you think that role fits either player, or do you think that it could go either way, keep Tatis at leadoff, or it doesn't matter?
The Padres are blessed because there are a lot of guys who would be suitable leadoff hitters. What it comes down to for me is that there really isn't a huge amount of difference between the best possible lineup and just any old normal, non-crazy lineup. We're talking really only a handful of runs a year. So what it comes down to, I think, I'm actually tend to side with where are players more comfortable. Cronenworth's not a huge home run guy, so my inclination would actually be for him to lead off. I don't think teams really care about leadoff hitters being speedsters anymore. I think we've kind of outgrown that. But I tend to think that Cronenworth would be my personal pick for leadoff. But there's probably, you know, four or five good options that you really can't go too wrong with.
Yeah, the Padres have options, and which is unusual for this team, if you're a fan of this franchise. I'd love to hear your thoughts on the evaluation of the Padres over the past few years.
Like in what regard?
The personnel, the change. Everyone knows the Camp Upton Myers deal in 2015 that kind of woke up the national media, if you will. And then they regressed to a rebuilding team. And they've gotten to this point now with a lot of young players and some key trades. Just kind of gush on the Padres, if you will, for fans, because they really don't get it very. They don't get there's just this has been a franchise that's been hurting for 50 years. So it's nice to have a future. And I think Padre fans would love to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I'm very happy how the rebuilding has gone. I've been even before they hired my friend Dave Cameron, because there's a kind of a bias in there. So I've known Dave for 25 years now. When they did kind of that weird offseason where they added things, I liked the idea of, winning now and pushing. I didn't really like the execution of it. Some people who are listening might remember I was a huge critic of the Matt Kemp trade. I thought it was a terrible idea. I don't think that history has necessarily changed that. Kemp was not a good fit, was declining and not very good. And I was not a fan of the Myers three-way. I liked it the least for the Rays. Because I did not understand one bit why they didn't just, keep the good part of the package instead of flipping him for Souza. It perplexed me beyond belief that in a trade between the Rays and the Padres that involved Will Myers, that somehow the Nationals won that trade. It's like, how did they even get involved here? It'd be weird. It'd be like someone buys a pizza at a pizzeria and I walk out with most of their pizza. It's like not paying for it. It's like, what happened here? Yeah. I really wanted, the Rays to get Trey Turner, and they should have. So the Padres don't get as much of my vitriol there. I have had some people complain to me on Twitter though, because they're like, we'll see when Trey Turner proves to be as valuable as Will Myers. Cause this was like only a couple of years ago. I said every GM in baseball would, if they had Will Myers and could trade them for Trey Turner, would do so. And they're like, no, they wouldn't. Like, yeah, they would. Absolutely. Are you crazy? There's not a lot of ways to tell people they're crazy without being rude about the whole thing. But I think since then it's been a very focused rebuild. After the let's push forward and win now thing didn't work, they didn't double down on the problems. And that's an important thing, because sometimes when you feel like you're invested in a certain plan and it's not working, you double down. I think they accepted that the trade was over. The trades were over. The signings were over. You couldn't really undo them. Let's see where we can go from here. And that's kind of the way you have to approach it. I was not a fan of the Hosmer signing, as people know. I felt that when it was a little early, and I think you sign a star early, when they're an actual star, you can't develop. The Padres were not a contending team when they signed Manny Machado, but there's are limited opportunities to sign a Manny Machado. Yeah. They don't come along that often, and there was every reason to believe that Manny Machado would still be Manny Machado when the Padres were good again. You didn't have that with the Hosmer signing. Hosmer was not a star by any stretch of the imagination.
Nobody was beating down his door either, right? I mean,
they were bidding with the Royals. And if you're bidding with the Royals, you should wonder why. It's like, why is it just us and the Royals? I'm uncomfortable now.
They should have been uncomfortable.
Well, the Royals, I guess, were saved by the Padres outbidding. I thought the contract was terrible for the team's point of view. It's great for Hosmer's. People were trying to tell me that the opt-out made it better for the Padres. I'm like, no, a player option does not make a player option is what players want, or players would demand that they don't have player options, because, and that's not how it works at all. As I said, when Hosmer works out wonderfully, it's a 5-year contract. When it works out terribly, it's an 8-year contract.
Exactly. He's not going to opt out after winning the MVP. He's going to opt out after hitting 220 and playing 50 games. And that's like what you mentioned, player options for players.
Yeah. He's, he's going to, you know, keep the money when he's not hitting at all.
Yeah.
But if he thinks he can do better, he's going to do better. And if he can do better, it means that he was awesome and you'd want to have him for three more years. So, I mean, it's a little beating a dead horse at this point, but it's kind of the elephant in the room, so to speak. It's hard not to talk about the team's planning without knowing that they still have Eric Hosmer for what, five more years?
Yeah.
Has it been 3 years already? Or
I think it's maybe it is four. I don't know. The no trade clock is on, but I don't know if they can.
Yeah, that's.
I mean, quite honestly. Yeah,
3 years. I can't. 2020 has kind of messed up my recognition of time.
Yeah.
It feels like things from like a year ago were like 5 years ago. Like the Houston Astros. Sign stealing and all that. I know.
Oh, they got a year ago. They got bailed out big time by coronavirus. I mean,
yeah, that was a year ago. It feels like it was 5 years ago.
Yeah.
I was trying to remember like instantly, like who won the World Series after the Nationals? This was like before the Dodgers had won. Like, oh no, that was just last year. This wasn't like 5 years ago.
Yeah. I hear you, Dan. Let's keep on that theme of 2020 and how it was bizarre. And we saw the DH in the National League, which is something we might see permanently. Give me your thoughts on that and whether it's just an old man complaining that pitchers are still hitting or what.
People tend to be confused by my take because it seems like everybody's either very for the DH or very against the DH. And I never really had a particular preference for either style. Growing up in Baltimore with cable, I mean, we had pretty good baseball access. I mean, we had the Orioles. We had TBS, of course, for the Braves and our local Comcast or whatever it used to be called in the 80s in Baltimore. We got WWOR, so we had the Mets. We got WGN, so we had the Cubs. So I had, you know, it was no MLB TV, but, you know, being a kid who has access to all the home games of four teams is pretty good. So you get to see a wide variety of baseball. So I got to see a lot of TV baseball as a kid. And I was fine with both the DH and no DH. But I think that going to no DH or going to DH and no pitchers hitting, excuse me, it was kind of inevitable simply because baseball around the world has largely embraced the DH. And I think when you have daily interleague play, you kind of want to have a universal DH because it's a slight but real disadvantage for National League teams relative to AL teams because AL teams all have. They mostly have full-time DHs or guys, or at least who play the majority of the games at DH. National League teams can't really do that. When interleague play was a new thing, and you know there were mismatched numbers of teams in each league, the interleague play was limited to two-week stints. And NL teams could plan around that. They could have a quadruple A guy that they bring up for those games, like Willie Pena was one of them. But when you have a daily interleague play and there's always an interleague game and your interleague games are kind of just sprinkled consistently through the season, it gets harder to plan that because you can't really carry a full-time DH. And with large pitching staffs, you don't really have pinch hitters the way you used to. There's no real Daryl Ward person just sitting at the end of most benches because you have, 12 or 13 man pitching staffs and benches for lineup for position players. It's pretty much these days, the catcher, the outfielder who can play center field, the guy who can play shortstop and maybe one other guy. Exactly. So you don't really have a DH type that the NL can have. And what it comes down to is most pitchers are terrible at hitting, even NL pitchers. So having NL pitchers, having pitchers who have experience hitting doesn't give you a big advantage over the AL, but the AL teams in those games have a DH while the NL teams are using whoever they have on hand. And I think that's kind of unfair from a competitive standpoint. And as long as you're going to have that, I think then you do need to have a universal DH, and it's sad in a way, but I don't think when it comes down to it, watching the NLDH in 2020, I don't think the product was any worse. because even if you take away kind of that strategizing, you know, with the bunting and the double shifting and you pull your picture, I think when it comes down to it, it's the Bill James argument that, yeah, you had that decision, but when you have an actual hitter in there, you have lots of decisions to make with that hitter and lots of things you can do. So it's not going to happen in 2021. It doesn't look like, but I would personally expect, I'd say, I guess 75, 25, 4, that we'll have universal DH in 2022.
And a guy that DH'd a lot for the San Diego Padres in 2020 was Tommy Pham when he wasn't out playing left field and coming back from his injury. Seen him play a ton, and even when he did play last year, wasn't fantastic. Now, that was in large part in a lot of people's eyes because of the injuries. But Zips projects them at a 2.6 WAR for next year and has a very high OBP. Is the injuries a concern at all for Tommy Pham in your eyes, or is he going to return to part of the player that he was that the Padres really wanted to acquire?
I'm not terribly worried. I don't think it was anything that really had significant long-term consequences. Zips does project to bounce back, and I'm with Zips on that. He has a pretty good history. Pham's, of course, terrific story. He's one of those guys who, I mean, he was a real late bloomer, and it's nice that teams will give players like that more chances than they would 20, 30 years ago. I do have to say, though, that Tommy Pham sue strip club after suffering catastrophic injuries is one of my favorite headlines of 2020. Because if you don't know the story, you're like, okay.
Yeah. I don't think he's ever going to live that one down. It was an unfortunate incident in a parking lot at a gentleman's club here in San Diego. What else can you say?
Hey, in Baltimore, the best place to get pit beef is a place called Chaps. A lot of people go there. And Chaps is a restaurant that's kind of in the parking lot of a strip club. And the thing about Baltimore is that there's a relationship between the quality of the pit beef and how seedy the area around it is. All good pit beef places are in kind of dodgy areas where you probably want to go during daylight hours. Like where Chaps is, they're in the parking lot of a strip club, and in the intersection they're at has a pawn shop, an adult video store, and a bail bondsman.
Nice.
So it's like, yeah. Oh, I know. Where's that pit beef's going to be great.
The liquor store around the corner? What? Okay. Let's I got a couple more for you before we let you go, Dan. Thank you again for coming on the show so close to the holiday season. Let's talk about Austin Adams, who Zips seems to have a little bit of an infatuation with. Give me your thoughts on him. A young right-handed reliever who the Padres obtained from the Mariners this offseason, or this winter, actually, or this season, this trade season, sorry. 2020's got me messed up too.
Yeah. Oh God, I just stored my laugh like I was Urkel. Austin Adams is a player that Zips has been infatuated with for a long time. Because of Zips, I really got on the Nationals for you know, basically just giving up on him. Yeah. He had great results in the minors. He throws hard. And, you know, in 2019, when he was healthy, he struck out, you know, 15 guys per nine innings. That's pretty good, I think. He was terrific for the Mariners. And I like that the Padres got him. He's a guy I could see as a closer if he's healthy. Yeah. Obviously, I don't know if he's necessarily plan A, but he throws 95. He's got a terrific slider. Mm-hmm. And with Seattle, he threw that slider a lot when he was healthy. Yeah. Literally, I think like 2/3 of the pitches. I mean, he was up in slider when he was up in Chaz Rowe territory. Or who am I thinking of? Oh, I forget. But I do like Adams a lot. He's one of the reasons I made sure to switch Zips over to MLB AM. IDs, Major League Baseball Advanced Media, because there's two Austin Adamses, and Zips would get them confused occasionally. The Austin Adami, because he's Austin L. Adams, and there's also an Austin D. Adams.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's anyone who's doing any kind of statistical work, make sure you're using IDs that don't repeat, because Austin Adams drove me nuts. The Chris Youngs sometimes did, but they were a little bit easier because, you know, one was a giant mega size picture and the other was, you know, a good center fielder. Yeah. There were two Jeff D'Amico's at the same time, as unlikely as that was.
Really? Wow. Okay. I can remember one, but there was two.
Yeah, there were two.
Okay, there you go. They got double the credit for his season in the baseball. You know, thank you again, Dan, for coming on. My last question for you is, you know, young Dominic, my co-host here, is a journalism student at ASU. What kind of advice would you give to young journalists who are coming up and trying to get in a very competitive market, which is journalism in sports?
I won't lie. It is tough out there. There's no way around it. I would recommend young journalists, one, to be well-rounded. Don't just focus on journalism. Have secondary skills that you can bring to journalism. Yeah. I mean, I was not a journalism major. I was a mathematics major. And obviously, that's not what every journalist is going to do, but it's what I do, and it's something that I can bring. Yeah. And I at this point, I'm one of the veterans of the sabermetric world, as weird as that seems to me. But I think you do want to bring those kind of things to the table. And it's good to have, you know, an independent voice. You want to have a niche. You want to see, you have to ask yourself, what do I do really, really well that other people don't? Mm-hmm. And that's kind of your key to being read as a journalist, because they have to come to you for something. And it can be almost anything, as long as you do it better and people want to read it. And so have a point of view. Go after what you're good at, and I think that's your best shot for a solid journalism career. Now, I should say, in all disclosure, is that it was I kind of came into journalism at a time it was easier to do so. As I always say, I grew up around the sabermetrics, and I was still a teenager when I got into the sabermetric community. I mean, I started working on Zips when I was in my early 20s, and at that point, I mean, I always say that the reason that I became employable was because, you know, I hung around a lot of smart people in the 90s and people confused that with me being smart. And that's kind of how it worked out. So it was easier for me simply because there wasn't as much of an internet baseball landscape. But I do think for interesting independent voices, there's always going to be a role. But you have to be flexible because the jobs are a little variable at the moment.
Yes, for sure.
Definitely. I appreciate the advice. And Dan, we appreciate you coming on to our podcast. This is Dan Szymborski. You can find him on Twitter at D Szymborski. That is DSZYMBORSKI. Don't want to misspell that because
it's a lot of letters.
It is.
And none of them make sense. If you read your name, if I read my name slowly, people are like, are you serious? Like S Z Y M? Do Y's go before M's and B's?
It's unique. It's unique.
Well, anyway, thanks for having me, guys. It's always fun. We'll do it again next time, next year.
For sure. Thank you, Dan. Have a great day. And again, thank you. Happy holidays, man.
Happy holidays.
Welcome back to episode 131 of the East Village Times podcast. I'm Dominic Stern, joined as always by my host, James Clark. That was our conversation with Dan Szymborski of Fangraphs and Zips. Fantastic conversation. He likes the Padres. Very optimistic about their future. He said they got them second best team in the National League. I'm not quite sure they're better than the Braves, but I'll take it.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a favorable evaluation for the Padres. And it's great to talk to Dan, who, you know, we talked to Dan immediately after the Kemp trades and after all the Meyer trade in 2015. And he was quite honest then, and he's quite honest now. He's a straight shooter, and I love that. And once again, I always say this, it's important to get evaluation from outside outlets, not that don't have any rooting interest in the Padres, aren't San Diegans, could care less. They give you an honest opinion of what's wrong with this team and what needs to be improved. I love the comments on Hosmer. I love the comments on you know, Lamet. It's just great to talk to Dan. He's a straight shooter, and it's awesome that, you know, he extended the olive branch out to Dominic and you know, if he ever needed anything. And that just shows what kind of a person Mr. Szymborski really is.
Yeah, no, that was cool. And I personally never gotten to talk to him before. And he gives some pretty solid advice that I definitely hear a lot at school. So it's good to hear that they're not just spewing BS to us when we're giving them thousands of dollars. So that's certainly good to hear. Definitely appreciate all the advice that we get, because very well aware of the situation that we're going into, and all the people that I listen to that are higher ups that have made it successfully into that business, you definitely like to hear their tips and tricks and advice for becoming a sports journalist.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. I mean, and the stuff he's done with Zips, I mean, he's pretty modest about what he's created and what he does for analytics and for baseball, but he's a big name out there and really does a lot for the sport. And I mean, the Zips projections are awesome. And looking over some of the Padres Zips projections, they're just so nice. It's just nice to see Tatis with a 6.6, Machado with a 4.8, Grissom at 3.3, Cronenworth at 3. I mean, those are solid WAR numbers, and we look forward to the 2021 season. Hopefully they can deliver on the promise and the evaluation that was given them.
Yeah, and I like to see that Zips is a big Grisham guy, because I certainly know that I'm a big Grisham guy. I have been ever since that trade. And I loved watching him do his work at the plate. He's such a controlled hitter at the plate. Him and Cronenworth both. Obviously, I knew more about Grisham going into the season than I did about Cronenworth, and obviously love Cronenworth now. So good to see that those guys are taking too many steps back from their shortened 60-game season, especially that last month from Cronenworth. And even Grisham certainly weren't encouraging months at all, but those two guys seem to be a big part of the Padres' future. Controlled contracts for a long time, as they were in their first and second years respectively. So love to see that.
Yeah, definitely. I found it interesting, the argument he made for and against Yates and Rosenthal. It was interesting to hear his criticism of Rosenthal, which you really don't get a lot of. I think Padre fans see all the interaction with him on Twitter and the Lolitas and the fact that he was dominant last year, and automatically say, give him the money, give him the money. And it's nice to hear Dan give a little bit of criticism, give a little bit of reality check, if you will, on the future of the Padres relief corps. So it's just nice to talk to Dan and get his opinion for sure.
And it was one of those things, like you mentioned like a couple of minutes ago, he's that unbiased opinion, not exactly from San Diego. Exactly. So he gives you that perspective as well. I personally don't agree with him on that. And that's not because I love Rosenthal or anything. It's not because I don't like Yates. Rosenthal was healthy last year. Yates was not. So that's my opinion on it. He's a smarter baseball mind than I am. So, but I can't always agree with everyone on everything.
You just got to register something like that in the back of your mind and kind of think about it. And the reality is Rosenthal has been up and down, and, you know, we saw a dominant performance out of him last year. Perhaps Dan didn't see that quite as much, so he doesn't necessarily know how well he was thrown. It's a lot of stuff to factor in the equation here, but it's still awesome and fantastic to hear an outsider's opinion of a player for sure.
But at the same time, Yates wasn't very good before he became a Padre in 2018, 2017. Yeah. So it goes both ways. And that's what's so hard about being a general manager, is there's no proper way to do things. No. There's no proper way. There's no perfect signing at the signing. So we'll see about these guys, because the Padres definitely need to add to the bullpen just a little bit. It's still going to be a strength like it was last year, but those two guys are, I'd imagine one of them comes back, maybe both.
Yeah. Well, we're hearing Darvish rumors today. We're hearing, Gray rumors. They're still moving and shaking going on with San Diego Padres. So there could be a holiday present left under the gift of Padre fans this season. So we'll just have to wait and see. Awesome show. Happy holidays to all you listeners out there, and thank you so much for the support. Dominic, go ahead and take us out of here. I think we've done well with this episode.
Yes, this has been episode 131 of the East Village Times Padres podcast. I'm Dominic Stern. You can find me on Twitter at DMStern19 to see my Padres stuff and just my other sports stuff as well. Follow James at EVT_JClark to see all of his stuff, as well as the articles that he posts. Follow us at EVT Podcast to know when we do post our podcast and any other clips. If we do involve video, this podcast was not done on video, so you won't be seeing that. And also make sure to follow us at EVT_news to find out whenever we do post our articles on eastvillagetimes.com. As this is the East Village Times podcast, a lot of good Padres stuff, a lot of good Aztec stuff, and some loyal stuff as the loyal season will be coming around shortly. So make sure to stay intact with us on that. We thank you all for tuning in. We will catch you guys next week on episode 132. Thank you for tuning in. Go Padres. Have a happy holidays.